Hey, podcast listeners. I just wanted to apologize in advance for the awkward manner that I asked my questions. Otherwise, let's get to the content.
Okay, so video games offering internal culture. This is specifically referring to, I guess the question is, does the internal culture affect it in regards to the sense of belonging?
The internal culture of like the community or the game itself?
I mean, I would say that it's fair to ask the question for both topics, but I think for right now, let's say the video game.
Yeah, I think so. Not that anyone is specifically looking for it, but people are innately attracted to games that have similar values to them, even if it's not expressly stated. One of the reasons I'm such a big fan of the games I'm a big fan of is because they give you the complete freedom to choose where you want to set up your whatever you're going to set up, your base of operations or your outpost or whatever your base or your home or whatever you want to call it. They give you the complete freedom to pick that, and then once it's chosen, you have the complete freedom to do whatever you want with it. So I really enjoy games like Minecraft, Terraria, Starbound, Stardew Valley. Stardew Valley doesn't really give you where you're going to build it, but it lets you do whatever you want with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a really big fan of being able to make a space my own. And I like being able to have something that I can leave and go adventuring and go find things and go exploring and go do cool stuff and then be able to go back and say, okay, I'm home, let me unwind, let me get organized, let me do all this stuff. And while I'm there, nothing's going to upset my day.
Okay.
And then once I leave there, it's fair game. And most of the games that I play have that. Animal Crossing has that. Skyward Sword had that, which is why I was such a big fan of that game.
Wait.
Wind Waker had that. Skyward Sword had the base that you would return to after each mission.
Oh, okay. Right.
And then it's funny because some games have this, but it's a terrible way. Phantom Hourglass had it. They had the place that you return to, but it wasn't a place that you return to unwind and relax. It was a place you return to, but had to go deeper into a dangerous expedition. And you had to keep coming back to the same expedition, repeating it over and over, and it was kind of annoying.
So, like, I guess, just so maybe I can understand this concept a little better, in Phantom Hourglass, you'd go out in order to get something that would let you go deeper into where you return from.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I mean, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah. And with Skyward Sword, you'd go out and you would do whatever you needed to do in the world, and you'd come back to the town and you could unwind, you could run around talking to villagers, you could go shopping, you could do whatever you wanted. And then Animal Crossing is the same thing. You've got your house that you can go to. Terraria, I don't know if everyone does this, but I always set up, like, I explore a decent chunk of the surface, and then I find where I'm going to put my base, and then I build it up and get my storage system going, because unorganized chests drive me crazy. And then I start exploring. Like, I'll go out and I'll explore, and then I'll come back to my base every once in a while and just unwind. And I actually spend a lot of my time in Terraria sitting at my base thinking about how I want to change it.
Okay.
And so that is let me wind way back to that question. That's the kind of game that attracts me.
Right.
And so I want to find communities of people who have that similar kind of, I like having, like, solid ground to stand on. And I'm fine running out into the world and doing crazy things, but I always want to come back to somewhere that gives me basically a sense of home in a game. Okay. And the types of games that I don't like to play that I see other people enjoying are like first-person shooters. Mm-hmm. I don't know many of those that have that.
Okay.
One of the reasons why Warframe looked interesting to me, even though it's normally a type of game I wouldn't like playing, is because every time I saw someone playing it, they would go out on a mission and they would always come back to their ship. And that ship was a nice place you could return to, and it felt like home. And I actually did play Warframe, played a grand total of like 5 missions. But I spent a good 70% of the time I was playing Warframe in that ship.
Wait, 70% of the time?
Yeah, like just wandering around looking at the ship, being home, and then like customizing my character a bit, going and looking at other things that I could customize. But I spent a lot of time in that ship just because that's what I like. And so I think I would end up finding communities for games that are like that. And I think other people who maybe don't really care as much about that home that they return to, they would go find communities that are more like them. So the players might not be looking specifically at the values in the games, but the games they spend the most time on are going to have the kind of things that are attracted, that attract them. And so they're going to find communities of other people who are attracted to that based on the same things, even if they're not realizing it. So the games are, the games are affecting the communities that are based on them, but not as much, like not as directly, or not as consciously as some of the players might be looking for.
Okay.
So yes.
Okay. From it affecting the culture, would you say that is the culture facilitated by the game, or is the culture facilitated by the player?
Both. It's a dual-sided magnet, basically. So the culture that's going to be created is there, and the type of games that fit into that culture are attracted to it by the types of people who are also attracted to that culture. So if it's someone who's looking for a really, really family-friendly environment, they're going to avoid non-family-friendly environments and games that facilitate that. Right. So they'll find a family-friendly environment, and then they'll find games that produce a family-friendly environment, and they'll play those games, talk about those games in that environment, and develop a culture based on that. So it's like if you had a box full of sand and iron filings. If you drop a magnet in there, is it going to be a culture of iron filings? Yes, but that's not because of either. It's because they attract each other and they don't attract the sand. It's a two-way street. It's not either one doing it explicitly, but just because of how they both, like, just the values that they both, like, show and want to be part of, they find that and they are attracted to that and they keep that in their lives.
Okay. Would...
Make sense?
No, that does make sense.
Okay.
So... I think, unfortunately, this just means that this question actually kind of just stops early on, because, you know, that's essentially kind of like, kind of touches base in terms of that question. So, with that subtopic being finished, I guess we'll just move on to the next one here. This is kind of like based on like the type of people, but not like in regards to like what they like, but mm-hmm. in regards to kind of like, I guess I should just ask the question, but can you find a variety of backgrounds, or do the games already cater to an audience?
Yeah, you can definitely find a variety of backgrounds. Like Warframe, for example. If I just saw Warframe out in the world, I would never go actively try to play that game.
Okay.
But because I have a group of friends that I already trust to play decent games, and if they tell me about a game, I trust that it's going to be a game worth playing based on how I enjoy playing games, then I'll go try it. And so if I were, and so this is how people find games that they wouldn't have gone specifically to look for. But maybe when you do that, you'll find a game that you really enjoy that doesn't necessarily have the things you would search for, but because someone gave it to you, you tried it. And so even just one person doing that, they're going to tell other people who have a similar thing to them, or a similar like game likes to them, and they'll bring in this whole extra part of the community that has different backgrounds. So it definitely attracts a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds. And then people also have really complex likes. Like, people enjoy, like, I enjoy sandbox games, and I enjoy building relationships with NPCs, even if they are just fake relationships. I enjoy doing that. And there's some people that don't care about that, but maybe they enjoy building a lot. So me and that other person would play Minecraft together. And I would build a village for the NPC villagers, and they would just build a really fancy temple or something. And then maybe there's someone that just likes the aspect of like digging, because I know a lot of people have very, very specific and unique enjoyments. Like for me, cleaning is one of those. Like I really, really enjoy the feeling of vacuuming up like a lot of sand off of the ground. Like just the clean that's left behind after that is something that's really satisfying. I actually found a community similar to that while watching Zeldathon.
just to make sure that I'm still on the same train of thought here. We're talking about like real life or like Minecraft?
Both.
Okay.
So Minecraft is like, it could be someone that likes to dig, someone that likes to build, someone that likes to interact with NPCs in video games.
Okay.
And then maybe you find something else. And I was just trying to explain the digging thing, because some people would be like, well, digging, that's really random. Why would you enjoy that? But there are people that just like to play Minecraft and go digging. Like, they don't want to go spelunking. They don't want to find treasure. They just want to dig. And I've actually, on every sandbox server that I spend a lot of time on, there's someone who's like that just wants to dig. And they're just like, does someone want something dug out? Because I want to dig. And it's interesting. But those three different likes, that being the core of why you play Minecraft, will still bring you to the same game, but they're very different backgrounds. Okay. So I think games will definitely bring different backgrounds. And I don't think, unless you have a game that's like super concentrated, like maybe Doki Doki Literature Club would be an example of a game that caters to a really specific audience.
Right.
I think most games are going to have very, very varied fan bases.
Okay. So so you're bringing this up in regards to like digging. And I think it's actually rather hilarious, because if you remember back in high school...
Yes, I do. I know where you're going with this.
I figured, like, since we're here, and this is probably going to be the only time where I ever, like, am reminded to to ask about this, why don't you go ahead and explain my nickname back in high school.
Back in high school.
Which was, if I remember correctly, now please like express this if I have it wrong, but I was called the Brazilian Horsepower?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you mind going in depth in that just a little bit?
It came from, we were all playing Minecraft, and one of our other friends, he goes by Silke online, he had this gigantic project that he wanted to do, and it was taking him forever to dig it out, because he doesn't, or at least he didn't back then, he didn't like just dig all the time, because for him that got really monotonous and he would get bored and go do something else. He'd go mining or he'd start building something, but his project was going really slow because he couldn't get this giant thing dug out. I think he was building it like a multi-hundred block glass dome, like multi-hundred block long glass dome.
Okay.
And then he got you to get on. And you just dug it out in like a day or two. And he was just, it was really crazy because you went in and you were like a machine. You just dug. And so he gave you these enchanted tools and you were just gone. And so ever since then, if we ever needed a really big project done out, dug out, we went and we asked the Brazilian Horsepower. And actually, every single time we play Minecraft nowadays, someone has this really big project they want to do that involves boring through a lot of dirt, and we're always just like, get the Brazilian Horsepower to do it.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So, with that being said, it actually, this is, kind of like goes into other topics we talked about. Would you say that instances of where that happened, where, you know, like, this mechanic in the game that allowed for faster digging essentially caused a abnormality in discussion with me, as in regards to, like, normally we just call this person Versidax, J-Bear, I think that's what I was called back then, but then now, all of a sudden, because of, like, you know my culture, or, like, you know, I was born from Brazil, now I'm in the United States. Do you think that was value added to the game, or was that value added to the community?
I think it would be more value added to the community, because it's still just a very specific case. Like, any random person booting up Minecraft doesn't have access to someone who's willing to just dig a lot of dirt.
Okay.
So it was definitely a value added to our community based on Minecraft, but it's interesting. So it was value added to our community, but that value only exists while we're playing Minecraft.
Okay. So like all simultaneously?
Yeah.
Or is it just like because we all play Minecraft?
because we played Minecraft together, whenever we are playing Minecraft, we think about that.
Oh, okay.
It never crosses our mind without Minecraft. And if we're playing Minecraft single player, it usually doesn't cross our mind because we don't have the community at that point. But if ever our community of friends plays Minecraft, that comes up every time.
Okay.
So it's value added to the community if Minecraft is there. But it's not value that's inherently added to Minecraft, if that makes sense.
Right. No. Okay. No. That's fair. Actually, I guess the notion of thinking that, like, a singular person all of a sudden affects all of Minecraft is actually a rather silly thing to think about. Which, I mean, I didn't think too much about it at the same point, but I think that also opened up to the discussion of, like, why specifically that is not the case. So, you know, thank you for explaining that, because I actually, I didn't think too much about it, but I was like, man, I think this is a fair question. This is actually a really silly question, but it's totally fine. And it ended up working out.
But yeah, it's good to explore too, because there's going to be a lot of people like, yeah. And there are people that a single person can add a lot of value to Minecraft, like, or to any game. I say Minecraft because I have examples. But for Minecraft, there's people like Stethbling out there who just basically by existing, they're just expounding on what Minecraft is capable of, because he's constantly out there doing ridiculous things within Minecraft. And then people take those things and they turn them into basically standard use. Like, I haven't actually seen it myself, but I've heard a lot about Sethling recently put out a data pack that lets you put stasis rune from Breath of the Wild into Minecraft. And I have no idea how that works or what it does.
Okay.
But a lot of people have heard about it, and a lot of people are using it, and apparently it's on some servers now, and they're using it to make mini-games, and I'm just like, that's really cool, and that definitely adds value to the game itself, and it was a single person that did that.
I see.
So it is possible for a single person to add value to a game, but our specific example just added value to our community.
Gotcha. Okay. No, that... Yeah, that, I guess there's both sides of the coin right there.
Yeah, these questions are all a lot more complicated than we can cover in a single podcast.
So with that said, this is going to diverge slightly from the main topic, but I think it could potentially still be a part of, you know, belonging in a community. And it would be, video games, like, continuous support for a video game typically needs, like, a back and forth between the community and the actual company itself. On a scale of, like, not even a scale, but just, like, how important would it be for the video games kind of essentially validate the communities built within it?
I think it's really important, because if you don't, like, if you're not catering to your current community, it's going to change, and it's hard to keep up with the change in a community. But if you do keep your current community interested, and I don't want to say, like, you cater to them, because that implies that you're, like, changing your game based on what the only people in the community say, which can lead down a rabbit hole, and I think there are some games that have done that. It's a combination of, you have to listen to what the community wants, and you have to balance that with what is going to be best for your game long term. And I think that Minecraft is probably the best example of a game that simultaneously listens to their community and does what's best for the game. Because every single update, they do major changes that people dislike, but eventually the community grows to accept them, and then they do other changes that the community is absolutely in love with.
Okay.
But they also do what I think is brilliantly, they pre-release. They kind of release a preview of what is going to be in the latest version, so they can get feedback on it before they actually publish it.
Okay.
And one of the more recent times that they updated, they released, I don't remember what it was. I think that they released like the stripped arc, the stripped log. When they first released it, it had a texture that most of the community hated. And they instantly gave their feedback on that all over the internet. And then when it came time for the actual release, it had been changed.
Okay.
And there were a couple other blocks they changed, and the community just filed. And they fixed them, and so a lot of the people were noticing that and very happy about that.
Do you think that added to to the sense of belonging, or did that just add value to the game intrinsically?
Both. All the people that saw the block before, that saw it changed based on their feedback, definitely feel heard by Mojang.
Okay.
And so they're a lot more loyal to the game because they know that the company respects their opinion about the game. And then it made the game better because a lot less people are going to have that negative reaction to that specific block.
Right.
When they see it the first time. And so it's difficult because if they always did that, I can see Minecraft going down a hole that would definitely ruin the game. But so it's a balance. You have to listen to your community, especially for games like Minecraft that are constantly updating and constantly changing. Another game that does it is League of Legends. From what I hear lately, they haven't been listening well to their community. And people are getting really upset. There's some champions that are getting certain, they're getting a little bit overpowered for a lane that they're not supposed to be in. The one I've heard about is Tahm Kench. He's supposed to be a support, but a lot of people are playing him top lane.
Oh.
And they were trying to nerf him because people have been complaining that he's too strong, but they're nerfing all of his support qualities. And they're doing nothing about his top lane qualities, but it's in top lane that he's being really overpowered. So they're not really listening very well to their community on that one, from what I've heard from a single person.
Right.
So I don't know how accurate that example is. But League actually usually does really well about listening to their community. Another game that tries to listen to their community but doesn't really have as much freedom as Minecraft and League is Legend of Zelda.
Okay.
So every time they release a new game, they get a ton of feedback on what the fans thought they could have done better in the game, what they like about the game, and then they have to try to apply that to the next game, but at the same time, the next game has to be different enough that it's not just that game too.
Okay.
So when they were doing Breath of the Wild, they were doing a huge risk, because Legend of Zelda games have always been a specific story that you go through in order.
Okay,
and
right,
then Breath
right.
of the Wild is open world, do what you want.
Okay.
And it was a really big risk for them because that was an almost complete 180 for what they normally do.
Okay.
And then with the next game that they're going to release, it's a Link's Awakening remake.
Oh, right. No, I remember seeing the E3.
So when people first saw that, they were really upset because it basically looks like toys on a board. And they didn't like that style because they really like Zelda's immersive, you feel like you're in the world gameplay. And so it kind of went against what the fans were all used to. And I kind of agreed with them until I actually heard the director's choice, like why he made that decision. And it completely changed it. And now I really like the style and I think it's brilliant. But it's difficult because I didn't understand it until someone actually explained it.
Okay.
And so that's one of the things that you really have to balance when you're making a game, especially one that's as popular as Zelda. I would be surprised if that game had as many sales as most of the other more recently released Zelda games, because people don't inherently know why that art style was chosen. And it's so contradictory to all the previous Zelda titles that a lot of people just aren't going to understand it, and you have to go looking for it.
I mean, so you've made me curious, and I guess, like, what was the reasoning that he had for that?
So his reasoning was he wanted to show off an old Zelda game from a top-down view, and one of his great big huge, and I don't know if I have this exactly right, but from what I can remember, one of his big memories of that game was it was the first time he had a world in his hands that he could play with.
Right.
And so he wants to recreate that feeling. So he made it a diorama of the world. So it's the same world with the same everything. And it because when he first played it, it was like on a Game Boy or something. I don't remember. But it's like this world that you hold in your hands that you manipulate. So he wanted to make a physical representation of that. So he made a diorama of a world that you could hold in your hands and manipulate, but it's a video game.
Oh, okay.
And that's why he did that. Or at least from what I can remember, that's why he did that. I would highly recommend going and watching the Nintendo E3 Treehouse about the new Link's Awakening game, because I didn't explain it as well as he did.
And that's 2019 E3.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
But because you have to get that explained, I think it kind of takes away from the value that could be there.
Okay.
And maybe they'll have something in, like, the opening sequence when you first play that explains that. I don't know. I think it would be brilliant on Nintendo's part if they did that.
Okay. Right.
But I think it's a good decision now. But because it had to be explained, I think it was kind of difficult. So Minecraft has a lot more immediate feedback. Zelda has that feedback, but they get like 2 years of feedback before they put out their next game, and then they get 2 more years of feedback, and they have to work with that the whole time. And it's really hard for them to change a game after it's released. And I think Nintendo's been doing a lot more public beta programs to try to fix that, but it's also really, really hard to do a beta program for a game with a specific story. Like, it's easy to do a beta for, like, Mario Kart, where you can just play the courses and the story doesn't really matter. What you're trying to do is get the best score.
Yeah.
But for a Zelda game, it's really hard to do a beta because you can only release so much of the story before you're spoiling the game.
Right. And that's understandable.
Yeah. Okay.
So, with that said, so we actually touched on the next topic very slightly. You gave it a little tap. And then you actually also brought in something else that I think that the video games community don't do well, or video game industry doesn't do well, that I also am now going to ask as part of, like, multiple questions. But, I mean, the questions I've only gone so far, sometimes they're really short, sometimes they're really long. And, you know, that's the way that it works. But we do have a break now.
Hey listeners, if you ever want to discuss or have any criticism, feedback, whatever it may be about the podcast, go ahead and at me on Twitter at Versidax, VERCIDAX, and I'll happily respond.